You're listening to Hooked on Startups, where every week you'll hear from some of the most talented, inspiring, and successful entrepreneurs who share their real-life stories, how they overcame challenges and failures, and how they mastered success. Get ready for some of the best business tips, tricks and tactics, and some frank, unscripted discussions. Here's your host, Matthew Sullivan.
Jonathan, you were just saying that you're currently in this horrible place called Florida, where it's wonderfully warm.
Wonderfully warm, temperate, sunny, people are friendly. Yeah, lots of good things going on.
But here, your practice, if I can call it that, is in the Windy City, I believe that's it's called.
You are 100% correct. Yeah, where my office is headquartered downtown Chicago.
So your business, you're an injury lawyer. So you specialize in, why don't you tell me? Because I'll just get it wrong.
To a lot of people who haven't really dealt with a personal injury attorney before, sometimes it's confusing. Basically, any type of situation where someone's been injured, from car accidents to nursing home negligence to medical malpractice cases, any type of personal injury case are the things that I work on. We also handle some more complex cases involving pharmaceutical drugs, you know, which involves like mass tort litigation. We sort of do it all. We tend to focus a little bit more on complex cases where there's a more significant injury as opposed to someone who may have just slip and fall and have a sore back or something. We tend to do more significant injury cases, but you'd be shocked to learn about some of the just peculiar ways that people get themselves injured.
Do you submit entries to the annual Darwin Award?
Is that survival of the fittest?
See, the Darwin Award is an award. I'm not sure who gives the award out, but it's for the person that has removed themselves from the gene pool in the most ridiculous fashion possible. So, you know, contender number one is someone, for example, who attached a JATO rocket to their car. JATO standing for jet assisted takeoff. It's the sort of thing that you normally put on large freighter aircraft, put it on top of his car, and then effectively flew into the side of a mountain. Another person was presented with an award who was so upset that the Coke fridge wouldn't give him a can of Coke. He shook it to the point that it actually collapsed on top of him.
Yes.
I'm sure you must come across dozens of potential contenders for the Darwin Award.
Of course, everyone I work with is completely free of any kind of contributory.
Of course, goes without saying. Yes.
But occasionally we do come into some odd situations where people may have been using table saws without a guide. They may have decided on their own to jerry-rig a chainsaw. You know, they may decide maybe that they're not feeling well. If two or three pills of their medication isn't really doing it, they may take, you know, several more.
Yeah, totally logical. Exactly.
Yeah, totally logical. Reasonable. Yes.
It's like the old joke, isn't it? Did you hear about the pick a nation that you want to offend? Did you hear about the person from X nation who decided to end his life by taking 1,000 Advil? And the answer to it is he felt much better after he'd taken two.
See?
I mean, the great thing is no one's going to listen to this, so we can actually have as much fun as we
want. No. I joke with myself and I joke with my friends, my family all the time, because you would be shocked. You know, we reject probably, I would say, well over half of the people who contact us, we just reject the case.
You mentioned earlier the concept of contributory negligence, because that's a relatively new construct in terms of tort, isn't it? So, and I think relatively new, sort of 20, 30 years old, I think, something like that.
Well, it depends on the state. Illinois has had it for, I don't know, I've only been practicing law for 20 something years. So as long as I've been part of it, they've had contributory fault.
I remember studying law at university many, many years ago, and this concept of contributory negligence was actually, gosh, you're probably right, because it was quite a long time ago that I went to university. So, you know, several decades. So clearly it's not new. So the interesting stuff that you get involved with is, as you said, is like the bigger cases. So you've got the bread and butter sort of injury cases. But, you know, what sort of insight do you get in terms of the way that large industries work? You know, you must deal with big pharma and the food industries. And do you find some really disturbing or complex questions that come out of the things that you uncover?
Absolutely. I mean, I think time and time again, it sounds real cliche that, you know, companies put profits over people. But It just happens in every single aspect of life. We do a lot in nursing home cases. And, you know, one of the ways that nursing home operators make money is they keep the heads on the beds and they hire the lowest qualified people. They pay them nothing and they drastically understaff the facilities. And, you know, when someone falls or, you know, something horrific happens, of course it's going to happen, unfortunately, because the people, you know, who are in these positions, who are working in these positions, don't have the tools that they need to do their jobs.
And I suppose also you've seen, I would have thought, a lot of light shining on these cases because of the pandemic in particular. So the pandemic has obviously affected everyone across the world in different ways, but has it laid bare many of the failings of these types of organizations because they cope with that additional pressure?
It has. Unfortunately, you know, a lot of state governments, including Illinois, have really insulated these industries, though, by passing laws to basically say that there's anything that's COVID related is essentially considered to be an emergency position, and particularly the medical industry is really insulated from liability because of COVID. So it has exposed all the negatives that we saw before have been exacerbated. But unfortunately, from a litigation perspective, we sort of have our hands tied behind our backs to a certain degree.
And so would you describe yourself as like the protector of the common man?
Absolutely.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Trademark at the end. Yes. But again,
I like that.
I suppose the issue is that there is, you know, with all of these things, there is a two-edged sword, isn't there? There's the perception and this sort of discussion point that actually, because of the increase in litigation, that actually makes quality of service poorer. Or, in other words, what impact do you think the ability to litigate the work that you do has on the industries as a whole? If people are more litigious, does that make for a better service to people, or does that make things worse for everyone generally?
Well, I guess it sort of just depends on situation, obviously. Moral issues aside, altruistic issues aside, we're frankly, we are in a business to make money, and we work on a contingency fee in all of these cases where we only get paid when and if we get a recovery. So we want to take cases that have as good of a likelihood as possible of recovery, you know, as much of a recovery as possible. So it's just bad business, frankly, to take every case that comes in the door and say, oh, well, we're going to try to do something with it. Because the truth is that especially for more complex cases and larger cases, no one's handing out the dollars until you really push their feet to the fire.
Yes.
And they know, frankly, that if you have a strong case, they know if you have a weak case, they know if you're the type of lawyer or type of person who's going to really push that case to trial, push it all the way, or if you're just going to maybe file a lawsuit, send off a letter, and try to get whatever you can on it. So at the end of the day, maybe there are some lawyers out there, maybe there are some law firms out there that are really just churning and burning volume out there. And again, this is not really a judgmental thing, but just from a business perspective, I want to invest the time and money into cases where I'm going to see the best chance of a return and the biggest return.
Yes. And again, that's again one of the complexities of a professional position such as the one that you have, is because you've got these two potentially opposing forces. You know, you have to make money on one side, but then you have the other sort of obligation, as it were. So you have to be professional, you have to be knowledgeable, you have to understand and be very good at your job. But at the same time, you have to have this sort of business acumen. So what sort of challenges have you faced how do you grow that business? How do you a brand, or how do you build that trust? An industry such as yours, which is regulated. In other words, you can't just go out there and, you know, make all of these specious claims.
No, you know, there's several different ways. I mean, in terms of the initial, you know, I guess, marketing aspect, that's one aspect. And we can talk about both of them. You know, getting the clients sort of just to pick up the phone, come in the door, so to speak. That's one aspect of the business. And then obviously the whole litigation side and actually legal practice side of things is another. There's a lot of people who are excellent, you know, trial attorneys who don't do a very good job marketing themselves and bringing people in door and generating business. And there's also people who generate a lot of business and sort of spin their wheels and, You know, if you ask them to go to court and do a trial or take a deposition, they're flustered. So it's a difficult balancing act. I try to do both, but frankly, I'm very fortunate. You know, I have attorneys in my office and attorneys that I work with who are very, very good litigators, who they're not into social media. They're not into online marketing. They're focused on litigating the cases. And I've increasingly sort of branched out and sort of said, you know what, there's a lot of people who are very good at this. I'm going to focus more of my energy towards the business generation side of things and really try to get those people the quality cases that they need to run a really strong business. So that's what I spend a good chunk of my time doing, is the business aspect of things.
And is that the way to grow a large practice?
Well, ultimately, in any type of business, you need to have customers, you need to have sales, you need to have people calling your phone. And yeah, from my perspective, yes. I think the days of, in particular with the law, the days of these sort of stodgy, old, traditional law firms that have done business the same way for decades, and they've had the same clients for decades. For those are still around, but for the most part, I see the legal industry sort of evolving, where the consumer today, frankly, is much more sophisticated than they were maybe 5 or 10 or 20 years ago. People today are really doing research on their particular situation. They're doing research on the attorneys. They're much more proactive, I think, than they were in the past. You know, I've been practicing law for over 20 years, and I've seen that a great migration of people in terms of seeking out knowledge. And people are really, they may see a billboard or something on the side of the road, and they may call that person. But at the end of the day, I find people are really looking online to try to educate themselves, try to get some information about their particular case, about their different options. And so that's what I've been really pushing in terms of my marketing materials.
And that's a common thread, because I think in all of the people, all of the businesses where, you know, I speak to the owners or principals, it's the same thing. In other words, to grow their business, you can't just throw the marketing over the fence, as it were, and hope that some of it lands. There is this real need to build trust, to be able to connect to customers. And I would have thought that that's pretty crucial in your business as well, because this concept of trust, where if the person who engages the attorney makes the wrong choice, then it's very difficult for them to go back and get out of that. So how do you try and connect to potential clients, other than making them sort of aware of what you've done historically?
Right. You know, that's a good question. You know, I think one of the things that we always try to do when we can, set up a face-to-face meeting. You know, I want people to see that I'm a real person, give them a flavor for my personality, good, bad, or otherwise. And I want us to see that I'm not some stodgy person who's, you know, on a pedestal, who's inaccessible. Yeah. You know, I give pretty much every client I have has my cell phone. Okay.
Yeah.
The vast majority of these people never use it. Okay. They're very conscientious about it. They respect, you know, my privacy, my time, or whatever. If they want to get a hold of me, they can email me, they can call me in the office. Once in a while, of course, people do call me on my cell phone, which is fine. But I think the gesture of giving out that cell phone and just being accessible and throwing out that goodwill gesture goes a long way towards building trust. And I've heard clients say to me, you know, over and over again, I can't believe you gave me your cell phone. You know, why would you do that? And I said, well, that's my job, you know, number one. And number two, I want you to be comfortable with me. And I want you to feel, you know, one of the biggest complaints clients have, all I've heard it for years and years and years, is I have a difficult time getting a hold of my attorney. Mm-hmm. My attorney, you know, is not returning my calls. I can't get a hold of him. I just have a question about my case. I have a question about this, and I can't get a hold of him or her. And, you know, knowing that, there are, of course, I mean, I've got busy days. The people I work with have busy days. But frankly, there's no excuse in today's world not to return a call within, you know, really by the end of the day, but certainly within 24 hours.
Do you think that's what's changed? So in your sort of 20 years of practicing law, I mean, what are the really big changes that you've seen, not from a legal perspective, but in just in terms of how firms do relate to their clients?
Well, you know, I think the people who are growing their practices are implementing these things. They are really making customer service a legitimate priority, as they should be doing. You know, a lot of times, you know, law firms would be like, they signed up that, you know, that's their current client. Who cares? I'll call them back tomorrow. I'll call the new person ahead. Mm. But in today's world, when you have different review sites alone, okay, you can't afford to have an unhappy customer out there.
Yes.
One bad seed and one person who's going out and just trashing your name, it's going to take a lot of work to undo that.
Yes. What drove you to specialize in this area?
That's a good question. No, frankly, I went to law school. I was a very obedient young man. And I went to college and I graduated with a journalism degree. And my parents said, "That's great. What are you going to do with that?" I said, "I don't know." And they said, well, how about going to law school?" And I said, "Great, I'll go to law school." And, you know, the truth is I went to law school. I wasn't particularly fond of it, but I wound up working at a clerking while I was in law school at a personal injury firm. Never had experience with it in the past. And honestly, it was just luck of the draw. I wound up there and it just happened to be something that resonated with me very quickly. You know, I love the fact that I could deal with people from all walks of life. You know, I was not working for, you know, big companies. I was not working for, you know, fancy people. I was working for people who really, for the most part, and again, the legal industry sort of has a bad rap, in particular, the personal injury world has bad rap because they think everyone's just an ambulance chaser and that, you know, it's just a churn and burn type game. But the truth is that most of the people that I dealt with were people who really were, they needed me in a time of need. You know, they were dealing with a horrible situation. You know, they were injured. They may have lost a family member. They had questions about their health. They had questions about their financial future. And to feel like, you know, you were able to help someone really transition them from the time after an accident through the litigation process and ultimately towards a resolution of a case was something that I enjoyed, as opposed to just sitting at a desk filling out hours, you know, on and on and on. So that was one aspect that I really enjoyed. The other aspect that I like, frankly, was the entrepreneurial aspect.
I was going to say, yes, because you've got that. It's almost like the best of both worlds, isn't it? Because you get to sort of meet with people, but you get to grow the business. But no, carry on. Sorry.
Well, no, I mean, you know, growing the business was something that really, you know, interested me early on. You know, I love the fact that everything, it was sort of, you know, you really had to stick your neck out on these cases because, you know, ultimately, you know, if you're not doing a good job, if you're not advancing the money, if you're not really investing the time needed, there's not going to be a good outcome for anyone. And I love that aspect of it. I love the fact that, you know, in particular with mass tort cases, I love the fact that you can start scaling those cases up. You know, you weren't just working on a single event. You were working, you know, in multiples. You were helping groups of people. And from a business perspective, it's very, very enticing because essentially I'm oversimplifying it to a certain degree because either you do have to do individualized work, but for a lot of these cases, there you can scale them. And if you're filing a lawsuit for one person, it's pretty easy to file the same case essentially for 20 or 30 or 50 or 100 people. So those different combination of factors was something that I really liked.
Yes. And again, it's not, you know, because working in an area of tort, in other words, you know, wrong. So wrong has been done. So it's not as if you're trying to create a, you know, something out of nothing. It is you're reacting to something that has happened and you're protecting clients who presumably without you, they wouldn't have any comeback or any ability to get redress.
Everyone complains about our legal system in the US until they actually need it.
Yes.
And the truth is that, you know, as for all its flaws, it's still a very, very good system. It's a very equitable system. And there are people who, frankly, have been horrifically wronged who would have no way of getting the redress that they need absent the legal system. So, you know, everyone complains about it. Yeah. I mean, sometimes the cases do drag on too long. There are problems with it. But for the most part, I mean, I'm impressed every day when, you know, these judges who may have 1,000 or several thousand cases on their docket, they sit down and they'll sit down with the client and they'll actually get to know the client. They'll get to know their situation and they'll really will work their best to resolve the case. So you know, I'm always impressed with that, frankly.
Do you see on the horizon any significant sea changes? And I'm thinking about environmental cases or, you know, cases of injury on a large scale caused by climate disasters or, you know, do you see exciting large scale developments that, that are sort of coming down the turnpike, as it were, that you can get involved with?
I mean, I think right now there's so many issues going on environmentally. I think we're sort of just beginning to see, you know, the impact that some of the corporate giants have, the decisions that they've been making over decades, we're just starting to see what's the impact of these. For example, in California, you know, there's been tremendous wildfires. And ultimately, what we're seeing a lot of times is these, either the power companies or some of these other companies involved, they've known about these risks for years, years before these, you know, episodes occurred. And they made a conscious decision. Again, it sounds very redundant, but they made a decision at some point to forego making those changes or forego maybe charging a higher rate for people, fear of backlash from the consumer, just because they were scared, frankly. So, you know, what's to come? Who knows? But I do think that probably will be an emerging trend in the future. You know, as long as we have, you know, these corporations out there that are sort of making billions and billions of dollars, I don't begrudge anyone for making money, frankly, making a lot of money. But as long as we've got these corporations out there who are essentially just pushing back on every aspect of regulation, we're going to have problems.
Yes. And there's the balance, isn't it? It's the cause and effect, isn't it? So, and I think all of these issues are caused by conscious decisions made at a management level. So these aren't just events that occur spontaneously. You know, the things that you deal with in most cases are the results of, you know, poor decisions that have been made adversely impact your clients.
Yeah. I mean, very rarely. I mean, of course, we have situations, we work with construction workers who may have been injured on a job site. There are some general contractors out there who they've made tremendous strides in terms of employee protection, and they've really adapted well. Unfortunately, when you have people in a position who are performing a potentially a dangerous task, there's always an opportunity for human error. But I think what we're talking about now with some of these larger scale situations is just, frankly, it's corporate greed, it's bad decision making, and it's unfortunate because really the people who are the real victims here are the people who can least afford to be injured. Most people don't have the wherewithal to get injured and not work for 6 months or a year or for 20 years. Yes. So those are the people that we really try to help. And we really try to think about what their immediate needs are, as well as the needs for the rest of their working life.
Again, you mentioned earlier that you work on a contingency basis. So is that something that is mainstream? Because I think there are many firms that don't work on contingency. So, you know, the fact that these all of your cases, because that's clearly that does put your client in a much stronger position because, you know, they're probably very much on the back foot.
Yeah, 100% of our cases are contingency. And that's sort of the industry norm. Once in a while, we'll have a client who will ask if we can do sort of a hybrid system where they may advance the costs on a case and we'll work the case on a contingency. But most people, again, they don't have the wherewithal to write a check for, you know, a lot of our cases are very expensive cases to litigate. Our time aside, to hire a doctor to review a case and to really, you know, hire expert witnesses and take depositions. I mean, a lot of our cases, by the time the case is ready for trial, we're into the case for $100,000.
Yes.
And most people don't have that kind of money.
So it really is a two-way investment. And again, that's something that, I think people may not be aware of, is the amount of expense, time, energy, because you don't win every case.
So. You can't. You can't. Anyone who says they win every case, I would just write on that fact alone, I would probably say goodbye.
Yes.
Thank you for your time. Goodbye. Because the truth is that there's so many variables, you know, out there. You know, I can't predict what's going to happen. A lot of times, you know, everyone goes into a case like a marriage. Everyone goes in with good intentions. Unfortunately, sometimes things come up where, you know, you can't foresee those, you know, going into it. But the truth is that, you know, we've been doing this enough. We try to mitigate the risks out there by screening the cases. We try to do as much as we can. But the truth is that there's no slam dunk, and that goes with the territory.
And again, being based in Chicago, which I think is one of the most violent cities in the US. Are there cases that you would sort of avoid? In other words, you know, like gun-related cases, for example. Are there some cases that are so wrapped in sort of politics and, you know, other elements that, they're too toxic for you to deal with?
Well, you know, ultimately, at the end of the day, we need to have a defendant who's got deep pockets. And, you know, we get contacted on a lot of different situations where there's violence, you know, in the city or something tragic happens. We just can't get involved in cases where there's no reckoning in terms of a payday for us. You know, as much as we'd like to help everyone, it's just, it's not viable. So yeah, we do get contacted by people pretty consistently where, you know, for example, in Illinois and in most states, you're required to have auto insurance. Unfortunately, there's about 10 to 15% of people out there yes. who are driving around without any type of auto insurance coverage. And I've had cases where people have been horrifically injured in auto accidents. They've maybe been pedestrians. They may yes. have been a passenger in a car.
Yes.
And without insurance, you got no options. So that's some of what's really one of the first things that we look to very early on is how are we going to recover? What avenues of recovery can we go after?
Yes. And again, that all of these things are difficult decisions to make, I guess, in terms of you've got the business side against, you know, tension with what you want to do as a practitioner. So if you were to go back 20 years when you started your career,
yeah.
is this still a path that you would have chosen?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Every day, honestly, I have made a lot of mistakes in my life, but this is not one of them. You know, I'm frankly
that's good. That's good for everyone to hear. Yeah.
No, I really do feel, frankly, you know, this is a great.
You didn't want to become an expert in constitutional and economic law of the United.
If someone needs a, I always tell people. I said, if you need a divorce attorney, don't yeah. call me. If you need a tax attorney, don't call me. If you need a civil rights attorney, don't call me. Okay, I know people who do these type of work and yes. who are excellent attorneys, and I can certainly help get you in contact with them. But I really enjoy, frankly, what I do and every different aspect of it. You know, I wake up crazy early. I get up yes. usually around 4 o'clock in the morning. And one of the first things I do is I jump out of bed and I'm sort of excited to look at my emails, to see what's gone on, you know, when yeah. I was sleeping, to see if there's new cases, you know, to look at the emails back and forth with other attorneys, the people who, you know, help me with marketing, you know, go the back and forth on all these different things. So I feel like I'm constantly stimulated by all these different parts of the business.
Is the dream, as your business builds and as your momentum builds, is the dream, and I'm not sure if I got this right, but to sort of find the next Erin Brockovich or the next Monsanto, or does one sort of look for those? Is that what defines one's career, or is it stuff, the stuff of fairy tales?
You know, I think it's a little bit of fairy tales. You know, the truth is that, especially with mass tort cases, you know, for example, I'm working on a lot of cases involving Zantac right now. Zantac's a heartburn medication. Yes. It was recalled by the FDA because there was a contaminant in there called NDMA. NDMA is a known carcinogen. And unfortunately, there were some errors in the manufacturing process where the temperatures weren't really monitored correctly and this NDMA formed and people took this Zantac and they wound up getting different types of cancers in the digestive tract. Now, case on the surface, it seems very clear cut and it seems very, you know, that I'm definitely oversimplifying it, but it seems relatively straightforward. The truth is that there's a lot to be learned about situations like that from the time the case, you know, sort of comes to, you hear about it in the news or people yes. start, you know, calling you and the time the case gets ready for trial or, you know, most of these mass tort cases do get resolved at some point. So if you're only invested in a case like that and that case goes sideways, that's probably not going to be a good business decision for you.
That's the real challenge for you is that, okay, as you say, you're fully invested, but then goes on for like 30 years or something. So
most of these cases do go on probably for, I would say, mass tort cases, 2 to 4 years, sometimes a little bit longer. And that's a long time.
Supporting all of those experts and, you know, all of that time.
You got to have a little bit of diversity in terms of cases to keep the lights on in the office while, yes. you know, cases like that are.
I mean, that's great. Another myth busted. That's all we're about here. It's just making sure that, you know, that we sort of, you know, dispense. So the critical thing is, you know, your clients, are they mainly from Illinois or are they sort of all over the US?
It depends on the case. We handle cases, honestly, with people all different areas of the country. If you're talking about auto case or something like that, most of them are in Illinois. You know, we get calls from people who were in trucking accidents. You know, they may have lived in Illinois. They may have been injured in Illinois where they're from another state. So we handle cases really all over. The geography aspect of things that used to be much more important. I think one of the things that we've seen over the past, you know, year and a half, 2 years is that, you know what? You can communicate with people pretty effectively, even if you don't live across the city from them. So people are much more comfortable contacting us who may live out of state. And it's worked out really well.
Yes, that's fantastic. Well, I mean, it is a fascinating area. And as you say, it is this great combination of sort of humanity and, you know, the technical aspects and the business aspects. So where do you see yourself in, I don't know, next few years? Is there a particular change or is it just growing, you know, more of the same, as it were?
Well, you know, I guess there's just so many different aspects of personal injury law. You know, I think we're going to start moving, frankly, away from a lot of the traditional high volume type cases, you know, the auto, the slip and fall, you know, and start moving more towards litigation involving drugs, medical devices. Unfortunately, you know, I think one of the things that we've seen in the past few years is that there's a whole group of people that we're sort of learning about who've been sexually abused in different institutions.
Yes.
And these are really, you know, life-changing, you know, situations where people have really been, you know, hesitant to come forward maybe for, you know, for decades. And because, frankly, of some of the publicity, they're more comfortable coming out now and really taking a stand and contacting an attorney at this point in their life because they've seen others. And so a situation like that is really, for me, it's really, it hits home because I really feel like I'm able to make an impact with them, with the client directly, as well as implement some changes at these institutions that are really going to protect people in the future.
Yes. That's fascinating stuff. And again, it is such, you know, the more you look at it, it is so important that there are people like you out there to protect people and to do something about this and have the teeth to try and dissuade people from doing it again in the future. So that's, I guess, you know, part of the outcome that you want as well is to make it so painful that it discourages people from, you know, continuing, you know, what they were doing.
You know, the only way, you know, you can really make these companies change is to really hit them in the pocketbook. You could say, you know, you could, you know, have the most tear-jerking story ever out there, and everyone may shake their head and say, "I'm sorry, I hear what you're saying." But the truth is that same thing's going to happen tomorrow unless they really make some changes and apply those changes. And the only way they're going to be applying those changes is if the company, the board of directors, the presidents of these companies, the managers at these companies are really fearful of significant repercussions. So, yeah, I mean, you know, it sounds corny, but that's the truth. I mean, I've seen it happen a lot of different situations, and it is nice when it happens.
Yes, that's wonderful. Well, let's change gear. Let's move on to the Hooked on Startups quickfire questionnaire. Now, hopefully, unlike your cases, you are unprepared for this.
I'm very unprepared.
Good. That's good. my preferred outcome. So I have 10 questions here, and you may plead the Fifth Amendment of the United States Constitution at any point, but I will continue to ask them until you do give me an answer. Question number one, what is your favorite word?
Hustle.
Question number two, what is your least favorite word?
Lazy.
Question number three, what are you most excited about right now?
Going e-foiling.
Going what?
I have a surfboard with a motor on it that you float above the water, about 4 feet above the water.
So you're in the business of breaking the laws of physics, basically.
You just asked me. That's just...
No. I'm afraid we're going to have to do something I don't normally do. We're going to have a hiatus here, and we're going to have to explore e-foiling. So you have you strap yourself to a motor, stand on top of a board, and then launch yourself in the ocean somewhere.
The motor is underneath the surfboard.
Oh, I see. Right. So that's
you're actually like about 4 feet above the water.
Right. So it's like a catamaran with one of the Marans missing.
It's like a surfboard with a
jet propelled
hand
grenade underneath.
Very cool. I just got it like a week ago. And it's very cool.
Was it sort of 250 miles an hour top speed, something like that?
25 miles an hour.
May I just remind you of our conversation earlier about the Darwin Award? I'm going to send you a link because I don't really want to sort of, you know, see your name coming up as the contender for the 2021 awards.
I don't either. I want to survive the Darwin Awards. I want to avoid that.
Are you able to represent yourself if something goes wrong?
I know a lot of very, very good lawyers who will be very eager to assist should I...
And did the person that sold you the board know what you did for a living before they sold you the board?
You know, strangely enough, they never asked. That's my credit card. That's it.
They're probably thinking, oh my God, that guy, you know. You'll probably get a knock on the door saying, can we have our board back just in case? So we'll move on. Thank you for that. That's fascinating stuff. Question number four. What turns you off right now?
You know, anyone who's got an attitude, you know, an elitist type attitude, I guess is just a turnoff, you know, where they feel like they're too good for any task. It's just a turnoff. It's been a turnoff before, and it feels like more of a turnoff now than ever.
Yeah, probably because you've seen both sides of that. You've seen what normally happens to people like that, you know, the power of karma.
Yeah, it's just not something I ever aspire to be.
I aspire to become the greatest asshole on earth. So I'm actually doing quite well at that at the moment. But question number five, what sound or noise do you love?
I like quiet, frankly. Quiet, the lack of noise.
Silence is golden.
Silence is golden.
And what sound or noise do you hate?
Kids yelling.
Other people's kids or your kids or just?
Any kids. Just don't like them anymore.
And question seven, this is where you may plead the fifth or any other amendment that you choose to select. What is your favorite curse word?
Fuck.
Good man. And just the delivery there. You know, it is. You can have 17 U's in that word as well.
I mean, there's just no question about that. It's an easy one.
I mean, people try and complicate the matter by having words, you know, that, you know, motherfucker, for example. Yeah, it's just, you know, let's get back to basics. It's the primordial word of which, you know, the universe was built. So thank you for that. Question number eight. What profession other than your own would you like to attempt?
Probably to be a chef.
Ooh, any particular style of cuisine?
Rustic Italian, like wood burning.
Right.
Stuff.
You mean pizzas to die for, that sort of thing. Proper handmade pan.
We can have another podcast about pizza making. Something.
Yeah, I think that in itself, you're right. Yes, I agree.
I'm into it. Let's just leave it.
I can see that. Yeah, exactly. Question nine. Conversely, what profession would you not like to attempt?
Teacher. I think being a teacher today is just a very difficult job. It's sort of a thankless job. And I don't have the patience for it. It's one of those things I'm just very ill-equipped for.
And again, I suppose you see a lot of, in your job, you're trying to educate people at the same time. I would have thought, you know, just imagine trying to do that full time.
Can't.
Yes. Can. My final question, and well, sort of semi-final question. Yeah. If heaven exists, what would you like to hear God say when you arrive at the pearly gates?
Great guy, hard worker. And he cared about his family quite a bit.
Fantastic. Well, Jonathan, it's been such a pleasure having you on. Thank you so much for being a guest on Hooked on Startups. How do people find out more about you? How do they get in touch with you? How do they benefit from these amazing services you provide?
Well, you can come to my website, rosenfeldinjurylawyers.com. You can look me up on YouTube, Rosenfeld Injury Law. And I also... Following your footsteps, I do have a personal injury podcast out there that's on all of the platforms. So look it up. It's called the Personal Injury Podcast. So fantastic. I look forward to it.
Wonderful. That's great. Thank you once again. And look forward to staying in touch and following your progress.
Thank you so much.